Hello and welcome to this podcast, which covers the discussions at the October 2016 meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board, held in London from the 17th to the 21st of October. My name is Roseanne Shipman and I'm part of the communications team at the IFRS Foundation. I'm joined by Sue Lloyd, Vice Chair of the ISB, and Hugh Shields, Executive Technical Director, to talk through the discussions and the decisions taken at the October meeting. Before I hand over to Sue and Hugh, I just want to mention that the views shared in this podcast are those of the participants. They do not necessarily represent those of the ISB. Hugh, one of the topics discussed at the October meeting was the agenda consultation. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yes, well, the important thing is that the board formally approved the publication of our feedback statement. And in fact, today as we're speaking, we just published the statement. We had discussed the main conclusions of the agenda consultation in previous podcasts, but just briefly to recap on the four key conclusions. The main messages are completion of the remaining major standard setting projects. Really, we're talking about insurance contracts, as well as the conceptual framework, although obviously that's not a standard. Second big message being better communication in financial reporting, where the main projects underpinning that are our primary financial statements project and our disclosure initiative. And also we have under that banner our work in the IFRS taxonomy area. Third message, continued focus on implementation support. And then finally, a much more focused research programme. And so now on our active research agenda, in addition to primary financial statements and disclosure initiative, we have financial instruments with the characteristics of equity, which Sue will be talking about later, accounting for dynamic risk management, business combinations under common control, and our project on goodwill and impairment, which is a follow-up to our post-implementation on IFRS 3. So that's very much where we are on the agenda consultation. The board had a discussion on the IFRS for SMEs standard. And in particular, the board discussed whether to start an interim review on the IFRS for SMEs standard. And if we were to do such a review, we'd consider any changes in new and amended full standards or any urgent issues. The board looked at the feedback that has come from our SME implementation group and consistent with that feedback, in fact, decided not to perform an interim review of the IFRS for SMEs standard. So that's where we are with that topic. On principles of disclosure, just a few words. Although the board didn't have a technical discussion of our principles of disclosure, but just a couple of points to mention. Firstly, the board decided that the comment period for the principles of disclosure discussion paper should be 180 days. It had previously been 150 days. The other point to mention about principles of disclosure is the board took a formal decision to allow them to really focus on the IFRS standard on insurance contracts, the forthcoming standard on insurance contracts. The board has decided to delay the publication of the principles of disclosure paper into the first half of 2017, into next year. Then, just continuing with the disclosure initiative, there was some a number of papers presented on materiality and really following up on our draft materiality practice statement. The first paper considered the audience focus and definition of materiality, and the board tentatively decided to clarify that the practice statement should address the application of materiality in preparing financial statements. And whilst also acknowledging that the practice statement may benefit from other parties who are involved in preparing financial statements. In addition, the board decided to include in the practice statement the explanation of the definition of materiality contained currently in IS 1, which covers the presentation of financial statements. And the board decided to make no changes to the definition of materiality in IFRS standards within this particular project. So that was the first paper. The board then went on to consider primary users' needs and expectations and tentatively decided to refer to primary users as defined by the conceptual framework throughout the practice statement as a whole. And so as a result of that, we'll be emphasising in the practice statement that primary users, when we talk about them, include potential investors, potential lenders and potential other creditors. There are other points of detail in that paper. I'd like to move to the next paper that was discussed, which was the materiality process. And here the board decided to explain that there is no hierarchy as such among materiality factors, but nonetheless that it could be efficient for entities to first assess an item for information from a quantitative perspective. Also, the board decided to explain that when an entity assesses whether an item of information is material on the basis of a qualitative factor, it will also need to consider quantitative factors. And in the end, it's all about judgment. I think that's the key point that the board is really trying to get across. The next paper considered by the board was in relation to the primary financial statements versus the notes, and also the whole topic of aggregation and disaggregation of information. And here the board decided to state that a single materiality assessment should be applied to all information included in the financial statements, and also to explain that an entity should select where to disclose material information within the financial statements in a way that communicates the information effectively and efficiently. So very much consistent with this theme of better communication, which has emerged from the agenda consultation. In discussing this, the board also noted that when thinking about the materiality assessment, the decision about how much to disaggregate or not should be made in the context of the primary financial statements and the notes together. And I think, yeah, let me just say a few words. There are a few other papers, but I think in terms of important papers, let me just make a couple of points on interim reporting and also on publicly available information. Firstly, the board tentatively decided to emphasise that when applying a materiality assessment to the interim financial report, an entity does need to consider the same factors it considers in the assessment for the annual financial statements. And then in relation to publicly available information, where there's been some discussion of this already, the board decided to remove the wording currently used in paragraphs 57 and 58 of the draft practice statement, and to specify that the public availability of information does not affect the materiality assessment, and also to specify that the public availability of information does not relieve an entity of the obligation to disclose material information. And with that, I shall pass on to Sue to talk about the conceptual framework.
Thanks, Hugh. So at the October meeting, the board continued its re-deliberations of the conceptual framework project, and we discussed quite a range of topics, including the concepts for executory contracts and unit of account, and also the definition of materiality. But I'll focus on a couple of the bigger discussions that we had. And the first of those was on the proposed definitions of assets and liabilities. And we actually had a really interesting session at our World Standard Setters meeting a few weeks ago, where we tested some examples and talked to people about whether the proposed definitions for assets and liabilities could be clearly applied to those fact patterns. So at the October meeting, the board looked at the feedback that we'd got from those discussions, which were generally supportive and suggested that those definitions were working the way we intended, but the staff also pointed out some clarifications that were going to be made in response to that testing process. Another important discussion we had on the conceptual framework was in the sphere of the prudence debate, which has been a big part of the re-deliberations. And people might remember that the board's already decided to confirm that we will include a reference to prudence in the new conceptual framework, which will be defined as the exercise of caution in conditions of uncertainty. But the discussion we had in October was about the concept of asymmetry and how that might be acknowledged in the conceptual framework. And what the board has tentatively decided is that the new conceptual framework should acknowledge that the exercise of prudence does not imply a need for the application of asymmetry. So it wouldn't, for example, be the case that we would require more persuasive evidence to routinely be required to support the recognition of assets and of liabilities. Having said that, the new document, though, will acknowledge that in some cases in financial reporting standards, such asymmetry will be required in order to provide the most relevant information. So that will be covered explicitly in that new conceptual framework document. We're quite close now to finishing the re-deliberations on the conceptual framework, actually, and those discussions will continue at the November board meeting. Another important topic that we discussed at the board meeting was to do with the implementation of existing IFRS, and just two topics that I'll talk quickly about there was, firstly, the board was asked to ratify a new IFRIC interpretation that deals with how to determine the exchange rate to use on initial recognition of an asset or expense when there's advance consideration received by an entity in a foreign currency. And all of the board members agreed to ratify that interpretation. So now we'll be able to proceed to issue that final interpretation. Another important discussion we had on implementation was about the interaction between IAS 28, investments in associates and joint ventures, and IFRS 9. And we've had an ongoing discussion between both at the Interpretations Committee and at the board about the appropriate accounting for long-term interests in associates or joint ventures that aren't subject to equity method accounting. And there'd been a suggestion from the Interpretations Committee that we issue an interpretation on this topic. The board has actually decided to take on board the feedback that we've received from the committee that we need to come up with a clarification to help people. But the board is planning, rather than issuing an interpretation, to actually propose an amendment to IAS 28 to clarify the interaction between these two standards. And at the October board meeting, the board tentatively decided to include that proposed amendment in the next cycle of annual improvements, the 2015 to 2017 cycle. Just the last project that I'll comment on that we discussed at the October meeting is our Financial Instruments with Characteristics of Equity Research Project, or FICE as it's often called, and we continued the discussions on that topic. And we talked about an important issue that we grapple with today in IAS 32, which is sort of this question of economic compulsion. So the board was discussing how classification should be thought about in situations where the issuer of an instrument has got the right to choose between two different settlement outcomes, one of which looked at in isolation would be a liability outcome and the other that would be an equity outcome. And the specific case that we looked at the board table was actually a reverse convertible bond, so where the issuer's got the choice to either deliver a fixed number of its own shares or to settle the instrument in cash. And the question that the board was asked to consider was whether the economic incentive, so the sort of likelihood of the entity choosing the share settlement or the cash settlement option, should be taken into account when you decide how to classify the instrument. And the board tentatively decided that economic incentives that might influence the outcome should not be considered when you classify a claim as either a liability or equity. So the classification, similarly to IAS 32 today, would be based on the substantive rights and obligations established in the contract. So if the issuer's got the choice to settle in a fixed number of its own shares, then that would determine its classification. Now, that proposal would be included in the FICE document that we put out for comment, hopefully next year, and it's most likely to be a discussion paper. So there'll be plenty of opportunity for people to comment on that tentative decision. And that was all I was going to say.
Thank you, Sue and Hugh. Before we finish, I just want to remind you that the official summary of the October board meeting, called IASB Update, can be found on the IFRS Foundation's website, www.ifrs.org. That contains further information on other topics that were also discussed at the October meeting. The next IASB meeting starts on the 14th of November. Thank you for listening.